I thought quite a bit about the topic for today's split sermon message. There have been just a few notable events happening lately, after all. Some of them have been on the world scene, frequently not very pleasant ones in that category. Some have been national developments, similar comment. Some are more locally based, and that's kind of a mixed bag. Some have had to do with the church and its work. That's much more encouraging as a general rule. Think ministerial conference. We've heard some reports on that. In fact, Mr. Horchak made just a few more comments briefly on it in this week's version of In Accord. If you watched that, you might have spotted that there was a connection to Mr. Kuntz's first split sermon this morning. Mr. Kyla was pictured as pointing to a parking spot where they were in the Great Smoky Mountains and for the Pentecost weekend, and he was pointing to a sign that said, "Thou shalt not park here." So, sort of connected to the Ten Commandments, only not. Maybe that's the 11th one. So the church's work is hopefully a little more encouraging to many of us as we view what's going on. As you know, for many years we've had a summer camp program that starts up about this time of year. In fact, tomorrow is the first day of the first of the preteen summer camps in Texas, Lone Star. So that one begins tomorrow, the first of the preteen camps, which typically run three or four days. The last locale for the International Leadership Program, this round of it, also is this weekend in Guatemala, the eighth and last round of the current third, I guess you'd call it the third round of the activities, the International Leadership Programs. That kicks off this weekend. They had some activity at welcoming it last night, and it begins today with some of the seminars. Some events that happen, of course, are for us all personal. Don and Faye Lambert's 67th anniversary yesterday. That's a personal thing. They were, I think, one of those betrothed couples, arranged marriage. I think Don was maybe six and Faye was two when it was arranged. And that's about when they're counting from, I'm sure. Maybe not. But it does go back for a few years. As you know, for Janelle and me, we've just passed a rather significant milestone in our lives, the 50th anniversary of our wedding, which actually took place on June the 3rd, 1973. That might call for a short message on marriage. But let me ask a question. How do you give a short message on marriage after you've just experienced it for 50 years? So I thought of a slightly different wrinkle. Since our recent extended trip to Texas began with teaching, the last 2 weeks of this academic year's class on modern church history, some connected thoughts came to mind as I was thinking about today's message. I'd like to follow up on that a bit and move to lessons common to us all. First of all, this year's class was somewhat unique. It was the third year that I've taught the class, always with my wife's help, which has really been essential. That help has been in research, in graphic assistance, PowerPoint support, interaction with the students in ways that she's a lot more effective and capable than I am, especially because she usually, one session or the other, will treat them to a lunch where she prepares a lunch and brings it in. It disappears rather quickly for some strange reason. And there are other ways that are probably too numerous to mention. I don't think that was ever more evident than this past academic year that just ended. This year, our third to work with the program was different from the first two. And you make some adjustments. I made quite a few after the first year. I switched a few classes around, dropped one, added one, made a few changes after the first time around. This time it was recorded, though, and is now halfway through being posted as part of FI Online, which most of you are aware. There are 9 classes up. Those were all filmed, recorded in December. We record the introductions in our home, in my study. It's not a huge office. In fact, at one point, when the techie that was helping us from Texas asked my wife if she could back up just a little further to get a better shot, she said, "Ashley, I'm already standing in his closet. If I back up anymore, I'll be in the neighbor's kitchen." So I guess we have to do what we have to do. So that's already up. We just finished recording the last of the classes that will be posted online, and we'll just do the same thing as we get to them after the feast, record an introduction from my home office. But the most that's different from the other 2 years and different from what it will be going forward. I won't take time to elaborate at length on how, but the most basic difference is that any interactive classroom discussion, which each class, we have each class at the last 15 to 20 minutes, cannot be communicated in the online version. It just simply doesn't work in that format. But something else has become clear with the airing of the first semester of the class, especially from the feedback that I've received. And a lot of people have been very kind to either write emails or to speak to us personally. There will be 8 more classes posted after the feast this year, and the final one will be posted, if plans go as anticipated, on Wednesday evening, December the 6th, which ironically will be the first day of the first class of the 4th academic year that we teach, same date. The fact that has become very clear to us is the fact that I am addressing 2 distinctly different groups. One group, the in-class presentation in Texas, and the students who were there. The second group, probably significantly larger, is the group that's watching online. This year's class, the smallest we ever had with 8 students, we've now graduated 175 students in 11 class years, so you can tell the average if you do the math. This year's class ranged in age from 19 to 30. Only one was over the age of 25, the 30-year-old. From the responses that have been sent in to the online version, it's clear that the online audience is significantly older. Several comments have come back. Now you're starting to get to events that I remember. Some of the class comments in the last class posted, number 9 on Big Sandy, we took it a little bit past the 1960s into the 70s when Big Sandy was temporarily closed and then reopened and so on. So there are a lot of people who remember and experienced events in the 60s and 70s in the church, quite a few still around, but obviously they aren't in their teens or 20s anymore. Those two groups have a very different time-located outlook on life. I found it interesting. I received one response just this past week from an individual who says he's been watching what are called the great courses online. And he's been watching history courses, and he says, he gave me the name of the professor. He says, this professor has exactly the same outlook and approach to history you do, which is, do not make the mistake of trying to take today's template and put it back on the history of what went before. He's trying to help in his presentation. I think he does more ancient history, this individual wrote about. His point is, you have to try to understand their lives in the context of their times, not the context of our time. And I'm trying to do the same. I found that interesting. Here's somebody who's probably a PhD and a career professor, probably been teaching for decades, and that's his approach, and that's kind of encouraging. But knowing that these two groups, the classroom and the online, have a very different time-located outlook on life, what does that mean? What does it mean for us who are the called out ones, whatever our age might be? Because of this past year's class of 8 students, 3 were baptized during the last academic year that they were in attendance at Foundation Institute. 3 out of the 8. And there were some, I don't know the exact number, I think at least 2, perhaps more, that were already baptized members before they came. One of the things it means is that our recall of events that happen in our world, like those 2 sets of FI students, is very different. Our recall is very different. Let me give you an example, a couple of brief examples. I'll pick a time frame and contrast the 2 sets. 1975. What does that mean to you? Well, you're probably thinking back. You might think in church terms. If you've been in the church a really long time, you might say, wasn't that the year when everybody was trying to calculate and figure stuff out? Wasn't that the year we thought Jesus Christ might return? Didn't we used to have a booklet that was titled 1975 in Prophecy? Yes, we did. But on the world scene, 1975 was the year of the final pullout of the United States military forces from Vietnam. The last troops were airlifted out from the American embassy by helicopter from Saigon, which no longer exists. Oh, the city is there, but it's not called Saigon. It's now Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, not in South Vietnam. The online students who are, let's say, ballpark 55 years old or more probably remember that because it occurred 48 years ago. So if you were at least 7 or 8, you may not have had a very good appreciation of what it meant. One news magazine years ago gave the age of 10 as a rule of thumb of saying that's about the age most young people will become aware of the events in their world and have some idea of what it means and how it connects to other things. So you'd have to be at least in your mid-50s to have much of a recall of the events of 1975, whether church or on the world scene. None of this year's FI class members were born yet. None were born yet, because it's 48 years ago. 1986, what does that year mean to you? Well, in the church world, you'll probably remember that was the year of the death of Herbert W. Armstrong, January the 16th of 1986. On the national scene, at least, and in some ways the world scene, 12 days later, on January the 28th, the space shuttle Challenger, carrying the first teacher into space, Krista McAuliffe, along with the others of the crew, exploded on takeoff. While hundreds, thousands of students were watching on their monitors because a teacher was going into space. I can't imagine what it was like for Krista McAuliffe's class. That was January of 1986. For online students, the over 45 crowd will certainly remember it because that's about 37 years ago, and they probably would recall that. And probably some who are close to 45 will have some recollection of it as well. The on-site class this year, not born yet. 1991, what does that mean? Well, let's pick on the world scene. That was the year of the first Gulf War. First Gulf War. Online, well, you'd have to be about 40 because it was 32 years ago. So using our basic rule of thumb of 10 years of age to understand it, yeah, you'd have to be about 40. Close to it anyway, to have much recall. Our class in Texas this past year, same refrain. Not yet born. 1995, what does that year mean to you? Well, in the church, probably the most significant to us, that would be the year, as we recall, the collapse of the worldwide Church of God as we knew it. The collapse of the worldwide Church of God as we knew it. And for those of us who had been part of the church for years, as I had been, my family began attending in 1960, so we're talking 35 years. And it was devastating. The online version, well, if those who are watching online are in their mid-30s or just a little bit more, they probably would recall it, mid to late 30s, because it was 28 years ago. They would only have the memories of a child, and we've discovered that does impact things. There were, going back one step or two steps to the destruction of the Space Shuttle Challenger, there were children who were traumatized by it because of seeing news replays. They thought it happened again. They thought it was over and over again. Because as a child, you can't distinguish that. In a more humorous line along the same way, our oldest daughter and I many, many years ago were watching a golf tournament on television. She was probably only about 5 or 6 at the time, and one of the golfers got a hole in one. And I got pretty excited, so then she got pretty excited, and then they showed a replay of it, and she turned around and she said, "Daddy, he did it again!" Because that's how children think. But 1995, this year's class, one of them was born already by 1995, the 30-year-old. She was 2. She was 2. I dare say her memories of it are non-existent. 2001. How about 9-1-1? What does that mean to most of us? We probably, those of us who were alive, will remember where we were, what we were doing exactly. Every generation has something like that. An event that is so striking that you remember it and you tend to orient your life memories around it. For my generation, my wife's generation, the boomers, it was the assassination of John F. Kennedy. We remember where we were, what we were doing. I was not quite 12 years of age. Every generation has that. There are some for whom 9-1-1 is that event. But they probably have to be in their early to mid-30s by now. Because 9-1-1 is now 22 years ago. Online students, again, probably they'd recall it if they're 30 or a bit more. In our class this year, some of the youngest in the class were still not born as of September 11th, 2001. The youngest student was only 19 this year. 2011. Church of God, a worldwide organization, was officially formed at a January 2011 conference in Louisville, Kentucky at the Galt House. Had been incorporated just a couple of weeks earlier in late December of 2010. Online, almost all of those watching online, with a very few exceptions, remember that very clearly. Very clearly. It's now an event that is a little over 12 years in the past, about 12 and a half years ago. The class, this year's class at the formation of CAGWA were between the ages of 4 and 14. Now process that for what that means in terms of your connection to your world. And you begin to see what the impetus was in adding this class to the curriculum of Foundation Institute. Mr. Franks had been talking about it for some years and took some steps toward dealing with it at the Young Adult Leadership Weekends by the messages he was presenting. And others were talking about it, and it finally came to a head, I'm told, at the Ministerial Board of Director meetings in early December of 2019, where they decided we've got to act on it now. And about 3 weeks later, my friend David Johnson tapped me on the shoulder and said, "We need to talk." While we're here at the Winter Family Weekend, I said, uh-oh. The thinking was that learning about our heritage is important for the generation growing to adulthood in the church. Mr. Franks made reference to it in the summary from the conference that you saw on that In Accord most recently. Of learning something of our history as a body of believers, not just the most recent, but going back, as we do in the class, a little over 200 years to give it a context. How can we tie all of that together? There's something ingenious that you know, we all know, that God uses to impart that understanding to all of us. What is our heritage? Let me try to list a few high spots, time-wise on a really extended timeline of what we know God is doing here below. Let me start with creation. That's quite some time ago. 6,000 years, give or take. Well, what recreation is, the reforming of the surface of the earth. We don't believe the planet is only 6,000 years old. Some groups believe that. It doesn't match up with the evidence we see around us. They explain it away by saying, well, it's due to apparent age. God made the earth and he made it look like it was millions of years old. That assigns a little bit of a kind of a sneaky motive to God, which we're not buying. All right, the move then to working with a nation, in this case Israel, not just individuals like the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, etc., etc., Enoch, Noah, you can list a whole bunch. That's another step. Christ's first coming as a human being, walking the earth for 33 and a half years, his sacrifice, his death, his resurrection, his return to his Father's throne. Not quite 2,000 years ago. Part of it. The founding of the New Testament church, day of Pentecost, AD 31. Jerusalem. God's work carried out here below. You might be very familiar with this verse from Matthew 24 and verse 14. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. And there's a whole lot more that's revealed in the Olivet prophecy of Matthew 24, along with the companion chapters in Mark and Luke. All right, that's part of the timeline. Move along. The return of Jesus Christ. Now we've skipped over quite a bit of history, haven't we? And in fact, what have we done? What have we moved into? We moved into the future. We don't know when it will be. There was a time in the church many years ago when we kind of thought it would have already happened by now. Resurrection of the saints, pretty much at the same time. The banishment of Satan. What a day that will be. The establishment and then the spread of the millennial reign of Christ, which will be the first task of the newly formed kingdom or family of God. Well, the family is in existence, but it only has two members at present. Properly speaking, the second resurrection, the destruction of the incorrigibly wicked, or we sometimes call it the third resurrection. And finally, on this timeline, the arrival of God the Father on this earth and a restructuring of what's called the new heavens and the new earth. And it appears that that's if that becomes the headquarters of the universe, because wherever the Father and his Son Jesus Christ are, I think you'd have to say that's the headquarters of the universe. Okay, that's a pretty good list to work with. It's a little rough to cover it in a split sermon. So let's go to work and take a different approach. Which of those events I've described do you remember? I know. Trick question. Well, none of them? What do you mean, none of them? Well, you could say one of them partially. I quoted Matthew 24:14. You could say, well, the gospel of the kingdom being preached as a witness. Yeah, I'm familiar with an ongoing tiny portion of that, and it's still happening. Fair enough. I suppose we could add another one as a parable. If I talk about creation, we sometimes say that the weekly Sabbath is sort of a reminder of, and a, I guess you'd say, a reference to creation. A picture of it. We are part of the carrying out of God's work. The theme from this past conference was workers together. preaching and protecting, or proclaiming and protecting God's truth. So we're all part of that, one way or another, but even that in its entirety is not yet accomplished. And the rest of it, well, some of them happened long ago, and several are yet in the future. But lessons about people and their lives are such important ways to learn. Look at Christ's own teaching. How often he spoke about practical examples of people's lives. We usually call them parables. Parables. Look at that list I gave you again, beginning with creation, working all the way down through to the arrival of God the Father on the earth and the new heavens and the new earth. Well, how many of them do we acknowledge every year in our lives right now? How many of those steps that I read to you? Just about every one. Or at least, from the other angle, the way we do remember them has a shorter list of seven steps, and pretty much every one of those seven steps was in the list I gave you. And how do we do that, brethren? I will make no apology for continuing to preach and remind and nag and harangue about the importance of the annual festivals of God. In studying for this class, we've discovered that there was one branch that seemed to be fairly active at one time that made a formal decision to reject the knowledge of the annual festivals. I mentioned it in the class already, if you listened to that section. It came to a head and caused a parting of the ways between Herbert and Loma Armstrong and the Church of God Seventh Day, of which they had been a part, because his credentials as a minister were revoked when he refused to stop teaching and preaching about the need to keep the annual festivals. And from that point, the growth of that ministry that began through his efforts exploded. And I covered that in some of the classes too. And the other group stayed pretty much static, with much slower growth. The holy days are crucial because, in effect, you and I become part of the central cast of the most important parable there is in God's Word. And in that light, many years ago, I was going through some old notes the other day. I saw a reference there, heard a very interesting comment about 20 years ago at the feast when we were in New Zealand one year. One of our elders there, Mr. Art Verschuer, was speaking and giving a sermon. And he made a statement that struck me then, and I noted it down in my notes, and it stayed with me. He said this, in talking about the kind of world that the millennial reign of Christ will oversee and what God's kingdom will accomplish when it begins as a governing body, he said, we must be living parables of the kingdom. We must be living parables of the kingdom. Why is that? Well, because we will be its administrators, its kings and priests. Revelation 5:10 mentions that. Revelation 5:10 says, you have made them, would be a better translation, kings and priests, because the angels are giving voice to this, and they shall reign on the earth. And in Revelation 20, in verses 4 and 6, we read these words, Revelation chapter 20 and verse 4, and I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Then I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus and for the Word of God, who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received his mark on their foreheads or on their hands. They lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. You do realize that this chapter of Revelation 20 is the first place in the Bible, in the third last chapter of the book, that it mentions how long the millennial reign of Christ will be. It's never mentioned until Revelation 20, where it's mentioned 6 times. 1,000 years. It says the rest of the dead didn't live again until those 1,000 years were finished. That's like a parenthetical thought. And then going back to what was described in verse 4, it says this is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is he who has part in the first resurrection. Over such the second death has no power, but they shall be priests of God and of Christ and shall reign with him 1,000 years. I suspect verses like that are why Mr. Verschuer said those words 20 years ago at the feast in New Zealand. We must be living parables of the kingdom. You know, when you think about parables, there are places you can go to in the Gospels to land among a whole bunch of them. Matthew 13 is one of those places. Matthew 13. Let's take a look briefly at the first one, the parable of the sower. The same day, verse 1, Jesus went out of the house and sat by the sea, and great multitudes were gathered together to him, so that he got into a boat and sat, and the whole multitude stood on the shore. And then he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, behold, a sower went out to sow. As he sowed, some seed fell by the wayside. The birds came and devoured those. Some fell on stony places. They didn't have much earth. They sprang up because they had no depth of earth. When the sun was up, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Some fell among thorns. The thorns sprang up and choked some of them. Others fell on good ground and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Parables, meanings, applications, lessons. Where do you fit? Where do I fit? He talks about the purpose of parables in the next few verses and tells the disciples in verse 16, blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. And he says, I tell you that there have been prophets and righteous men who looked forward to the time and wished they could have seen back then what you know now. There's that time-related focus. Even some of the prophets and the righteous people of the past didn't know what you and I know. Our time-related view is different, but some things contain an ongoing picture. Verse 18, hear the parable of the sower, and he gives the explanation over the next several verses. And again, I ask, where are we? What kind of ground are we? The wheat and the tares follow in verses 24 to 30. And I ask again, where are we? Because it's clear that there's a mix through time and the people God's working with. Then there's the mustard seed, and there's leaven, verses 31, 32, 33, tiny little examples. Do we get the point? Here's the crucial application in verses 34 and 35. All these things Jesus spoke to the multitude in parables. Without a parable, he did not speak to them, that it might be fulfilled, spoken by the prophet, saying, I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things kept secret from the foundation of the world. Why, brethren, do we understand things the world cannot understand? One good reason. We keep God's annual holy days. They help us be the living parables because we're reminded every year of where we are on the timeline, of what went before, of what yet has to happen, of what God's purposes are. The quote here in Matthew is actually from Psalm 78. It says the prophet, but the prophet in this case wrote Psalm 78, not Isaiah or Jeremiah or Ezekiel. Psalm 78. Let's take a look at the first eight verses. Give ear, my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I'll open my mouth in a parable. I'll utter dark sayings of old, which we've heard and known and our fathers have told us. We won't hide them from their children, telling to the generation to come the praises of God and His strength and His wonderful works He's done. He established a testimony in Jacob. He appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers, previous generations, to when He was writing, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, the children who would be born, that they may arise and declare them to their children. That list of comparisons I gave you for the two audiences I know I'm addressing in modern church history. The ones who are older, the ones in the classroom. I don't know yet the composite of the next class coming in. At this point, it looks to be a slightly larger one than the past one, but I know some of the people who will be there, and they're in their early 20s, most of them. Well, there is one lady there who is, let's just say, a mature student. And I'm looking forward to seeing her there in the class, too. They do add something in many ways to the class. That they may set their hope in God, verse 7, and not forget His works, but keep His commandments, may not be like their fathers who were a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that didn't set its heart aright and whose spirit wasn't faithful. Those words are important. Are we busily being about our Father's business in this way? Israel didn't follow through on their opportunity, and it has become ours. Paul referred in Galatians 6:16 to the church as the Israel of God. You read the next few verses here in Psalm 78. It talks about how they didn't keep His covenant. They refused to walk in His law. They forgot His works. We've known people who have forgotten major chunks of God's plan because they don't connect with the holy days anymore. Marvelous things He did in the sight of their fathers. He divided the sea, all those things that were past. We have to remember those things, even though we never saw them, as evidence of how God works. And look for comparisons in our lives as living parables. You come down to verse 37. Their heart wasn't steadfast with Him. They weren't faithful in His covenant. He, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity, didn't destroy them. Many a time He turned His anger away and didn't stir up all His wrath. He's patient. He's merciful. But at some point, the tide has to turn. He remembered they were but flesh, a breath that passes away and doesn't come again. How often they provoked Him in the wilderness and grieved Him in the desert. Again and again they tempted God and they limited the Holy One of Israel. What a condemnation. To limit the Holy One of Israel? God isn't limited like we are. They didn't remember His power the day that He redeemed them from the enemy. Brethren, He's done all of those things for us in different ways. Verse 52, He made His own people go like sheep. He guided them in the wilderness like a flock. He led them on safely. They didn't fear. The sea overwhelmed their enemies. He brought them to His holy border, the mountain which His right hand had acquired. He drove out nations before them, allotted them an inheritance, and made the tribes of Israel dwell in their tents. Yet they tested and provoked Him and didn't keep His testimonies, turned back, acted unfaithfully like their fathers, and so on and so on. And so it says at the end of this chapter, He chose David His servant, verse 70, and He took him from the sheepfolds. From following the ewes that had young, He brought him to shepherd Jacob His people and guided them by the skillfulness. He shepherded them according to the integrity of His heart, and He guided them by the skillfulness of His hand. That's our God. And He teaches us every year. I've been struck, as I've said, in going through and getting responses to the online version of the class. I've been struck by the difference, and it hit me fairly early on. This is a different audience. I've taught this thing 3 years now, and all the other classes are now recorded. We just have to do the intros after the feast. Well, it's a different audience. It's interesting to speak to young people and look out there and say, in my mind, they don't remember 911. They weren't born yet. I remember 911 like it was yesterday. And then I realize, no, it's almost 22 years ago. Time changes. We got out our wedding album to set out a few pictures for this little shindig tomorrow, and took one look and say, who are those people? Time changes your perspective. God makes sure we keep a perspective that He wants. We are now between feast seasons. We're between season two, which reflects mostly the past we can't remember because we weren't there, and the future we have yet to experience and live because it hasn't happened yet. All the fall festivals are about the future. Pentecost has an element of identifying us as the first fruits. That's an ongoing thing. But other than that part, the early festivals were before we were born, like so much of what I went through for this year's FI class. But we are still those living parables of God's kingdom, aren't we? One thing proves interesting. Again, remember all those statistics I gave about who does and who doesn't remember certain events? Why is that? Because as time passes, new babies are born, they have no direct recollection of events before their birth, or even ones from their earliest years in life. Once in a while, if it's been a while, somebody will come up and say, here's my child, you know, here's my son. About 6 years ago, I was conducting a funeral and met someone from a previous church area that I hadn't seen for about almost 30 years. He introduced me to his family and he said, and here's my daughter, Janelle. Wonder where that came from. Sometimes people come up and say, do you remember, you know, here's this strapping 16-year-old, stands 6'5" and looks like he could, you know, pick me up and throw me into the next county. You picked him up and blessed him when it was a little baby. Good thing I didn't try it when he was 16. Babies are born, and they have no direct recollection of events before their birth, or even ones from their earliest years of life. They don't grasp the significance, the directness, the connection. As they say, history repeats itself. Do we see what God does? In His plan, He takes some events that have already happened, and He takes several more that are yet in the future. And He constructs a set of annual observances, special times, festivals, holy days. And He guides all of us to keep and observe them every year. So what happens in this progression? Every year, as new ones are born or are called to His truth in adulthood, they're taught. And they're part of the events of His plan. By living the picture of those plans, that plan, either their remembrances or their foretaste. Ask anybody who attends a feast, do you remember your first feast? They might say, well, I don't remember my first one, but let me tell you about the first one I do remember. And then they may launch into it, and if you're talking to a 10-year-old, he may be saying, it was 5 years ago. And you're saying, 5 years ago is a blink of an eye. But that was the first feast the child remembers. And ask him or her to describe to you what they did. And they may be able to launch into some rather detailed descriptions of a zoo they went to, or of an activity they took part in, or something of a side trip at that feast, or where they were. Now ask some of the rest of us who've been around for a while, and we'll say, well, we loaded up our covered wagon and we drove to the feast. Not quite. It was a station wagon. It was a 59 Studebaker station wagon, and we drove to Big Sandy. God brings us into the plan, into the picture as we go. And the lessons are driven home ever more deeply, and we prepare for the future in His family. Many years ago, we were attending a feast. We're at the seniors' lunch, and one of the questions was, who here has kept the most feasts? And, you know, they tended to do that at all the senior luncheons. I hope they've stopped, because now it just, you know, the list gets longer. But this one lady, they kept going further and further back. This feast was probably in the late 1970s. And finally, this one lady's hand was still up, and finally the MC said, Mrs. So-and-so, how many feasts is this for you? And she gave him a number, and then she said, he said, really? She said, I was baptized in 1922. Then she said 5 years before Herbert W. Armstrong was, because she'd been part of the previous organization, the Church of God Seventh Day, when she was a young woman. And that kind of impressed on all of us that time moves along. Of course, she is now long gone. And her children are in their 80s, if they're still living. God is perfect. Every year, the lessons are driven home. No one forgets. They just remember different slices in the timeline. And we do it every year. We become part of the living parable. How could we ever forget? There is one way that we don't ever want to see happen. If we were ever to stop keeping God's appointed feasts, we would forget. Brethren, we must not ever do that. Remember the high points of God's plan, even if you've never lived them yet. Or don't remember them from the past. Be a living parable.